Fires ran wild in several parts of the Klamath National Forest in California last summer and fall. The burn scars are still there for all to see, but plans are in the works to restore the burned areas. The West Side Fire Recovery Project is the name for proposals to perform forest restoration work and take out some wood in three general areas of the forest. The draft environmental impact statement, which you'll hear referred to as DEIS many times in this half hour, I'm confident, recently came out, and it is open for public comment between now and the middle of April. Three guests join us in the studio. Patricia Patty Grantham is the Klamath National Forest Supervisor. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Andrew Scowland is here as well. He's the Deputy District Ranger at the Salmon Scott Ranger District and the West Side Fire Recovery Project Coordinator. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
And off microphone at the moment is Josh O'Veal, Public Affairs Specialist. Thanks for coming, Josh. Generally, Patty, what triggers a recovery process like this versus just leaving the burn area alone?
Yeah, well, you did a great introduction for what we're here to talk about today, Jeffrey. And so if we rewind just a little bit to the summer of 2014, you know, we encountered a record-setting wildfire year on the Klamath. I'm sure that most of the listeners, at least up here in the Rogue Valley area, were well aware of that because I think we pushed smoke into this area for the better part of 2 months. But burned in excess of about 225,000 acres, and a lot of that because of the third year of drought and just, you know, record-setting temperatures in July, a lot of that burned at a very high severity. More so than we would normally see, you know, in wildfire conditions. And so basically the fire restoration project that we have going is in response to those burned areas you know, what we're proposing to do in terms of the projects really have three objectives. The first one is to reduce hazards to the public and to forest workers. And this includes reducing fuels along private property boundaries, roadsides, and utility corridors. The second objective is to take a look at recovering the value of the burned trees. And the third objective is to look at replanting areas that could benefit from replanting in order to accelerate the reestablishment of forest in a lot of areas that there's just no forest left.
Is there an option? Actually, I guess there is, because that'd be the no-action alternative, to just leave things alone. I mean, is that something that is ever considered in a situation like this?
Sure, absolutely. And we went out with a proposed action last fall, and we did some public comment, and we built a number of alternatives around that public comment. And the alternatives focus around concerns about wildlife habitat and placing a greater emphasis on that, you know, in the recovery. Another alternative was built around concerns around watershed values, water quality, and fisheries habitat. And the last one was really focused on not doing any salvage work within what we call late successional reserves place, which was the vast majority of the burned area this year. But, and, you know, staying out of those and really, you know, focusing on areas where we have an emphasis on timber harvest.
So the late successional reserves are the areas designed to generally be, if not, in fact, old growth now, to be in the near future?
That's correct. You know, that's our objective in there is to, you know, reach those old growth characteristics, you know, older forest characteristics in order to benefit the, you know, wildlife and fisheries and other species that depend on that kind of thing.
Andrew Scowland, has the process moved unusually quickly? I mean, we've got a DEIS in front of us, Draft Environmental Impact Statement, basically 8 months after the fire started.
Yeah, you know, this this process, we've needed to move real as quickly as possible in order to get the DEIS published and, you know, move forward with the project. You know, if this were a typical project, you know, we would have a lot more time available. It's really driven by the need to get out there and treat the landscape. You know, one of the main objectives that I think we have out there is to, you know, reduce those hazardous fuels that are out on the landscape and will, you know, persist over the next, you know, 20 to 30 years or more, if we choose to not go out and do any treatments.
Well, all right. So the whole point of reducing hazardous fuels, I'm sure a few people are going to say, well, didn't the fire actually get rid of those fuels?
That's a great observation because that's true. So this coming summer, unfortunately, you know, looking at another year of drought, you know, staring us in the face here, if we had a bunch of lightning strikes within this area that burned, we wouldn't have any fires because of, you know, the surface fuels have largely been reduced. They're gone. What's out there are, by and large, you know, standing black sticks now. And so really what we're focused on is that future fire, that 25 to 30 years out when all of that standing dead material is going to fall down. There's going to be a brush component that's going to come in behind it. And, you know, we're going to have conditions that we just aren't really going to be able to safely address in fire suppression.
Did the fires burn unnaturally hot in the sense that it wiped out things that a fire in a natural sort of ecosystem wouldn't have done?
Well, I've been on the Klamath for 8 years, and so I can just share with you, you know, what I've read and what I've experienced, and that is, you know, we live in a fireplace. I mean, that's just the reality here, this nice Mediterranean climate that we all enjoy. You know, we grow a lot of trees, we grow a lot of underbrush, and we have these hot summers that have lightning that comes in with them. And what I've seen is when you talk about high severity fire in terms of, you know, really just black standing trees on the landscape, nothing left on the understory, just, you know, burned down to soil, sometimes burned into the soil. I think that typically, I would say our range is probably 10, 12, 14%. You know, I would say that that's within the range of natural variability. So high severity fire is a real thing that happens out there in the landscape. This year, when we take a look at all the acres that burned, I think the number pops up at about 27%. So again, 3 years of drought. I'm not sure if you or your listeners are aware. This is a statistic that's near and dear to my heart. In July, we crushed Happy Camp and Yreka crushed the previous record for the average daily maximum high temperature by 4 degrees. So,
which is significant.
Which is just crazy, you know. I mean, those weather records, I think in the case of Yreka, are probably in excess of 100 years. And so when you look at those kinds of things, you really see the summer lining up to do what it did.
We're talking about the West Side Fire Recovery Project in the Klamath National Forest. Patty Grantham is the National Forest Supervisor in the Klamath. Andrew Scowlin's here as well, the Deputy District Ranger in the Salmon Scott Ranger District and the West Side Fire Recovery Project Coordinator. Josh Veal, Public Affairs Specialist, is with us from the Klamath National Forest as well. You can join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org or check out the picture of our guests on our Facebook page. I understand that two local groups formed to assist the process. Andrew, tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a number of two collaborative groups that are working with us that are, you know, representative of the greater Siskiyou County area. You know, one of those groups is being led by a local organization out of Fort Jones, and the other is being kind of spearheaded by Siskiyou County. You know, they're really informing the process and helping to work with us to, you know, address what the people of Siskiyou County want to see done on the landscape out there.
Let me understand how the alternatives are developed. I mean, is it just degrees of stuff from leave it all alone to take it all out? I mean, do you just go on a spectrum like that, or do you pick things that center around certain aspects of forestry you want to promote?
You know, in the process of developing the alternatives, you know, we always have the no action alternative, which is kind of the measuring stick that allows you to really assess what your impacts are going to be out there. And then We take direction from the forest supervisor on what, you know, what she wants to see done on the landscape. And then we also have, you know, a scoping period that we take the project as it's proposed out to the public, get public input into what we've proposed, and that's actually where the alternatives are developed out of those public comments.
And just to kind of tag on your comment about, you know, taking it all, we really tried to focus on – we started the project by focusing on high and moderate severity, what we call burn impacts. And so if, you know, listeners can just kind of imagine, you know, high severity, again, it's that landscape where it's just acre upon acre of dead standing trees, black, you know, and really nothing left in the understory. You know, moderate severity, kind of more mixed green and that kind of thing. And as the project went on, really our focus became the high severity. It became very clear that, you know, we just had a lot of that out there. I think that our remote sensing data, you know, said something like 40 to 45,000 acres of that high severity area. And our proposed action, which is, you know, the most robust in terms of treatment, I think that it looks at about 12,000 acres of treating about 12,000 acres of that. So it's not even a question of, you know, going after everything again, because, you know, at some point we had to make a decision about what was the highest priority stuff to focus on, because we were not going to be able to get through this process in a timely manner if, you know, we were out there trying to do everything.
I'm sure somebody's going to ask whether or not there are clear cuts involved with this.
You know, because there are the fire created clear cuts, you know, is my you know, feedback on that, because there are just, you know, there are places where there are thousands of acres of standing dead trees and, you know, not a green needle in sight kind of a thing. And but within those areas of treatment, you know, we are going to be leaving protections along riparian areas, even though, you know, it's dead material. It does provide, you know, some shade and some cover to those areas. And so, you know, the landscape is going to be broken up by things like that.
In addition to those riparian areas, in the large landscape burn scenarios, there will likely be additional, you know, leave tree patches to meet our requirements for, you know, different species of wildlife and, you know, the different objectives that are laid out in our forest plan.
I see acres on the plans. I have not seen, and granted it's a 300-plus page document, which I have only seen in PDF form until Andrew brought his in. It's about an inch and a half thick. Is there a specified amount of board footage you think that'll come out in timber salvage here?
Well, you know, there is, but it's really a you know, a great swag. We really haven't spent any time, you know, focused on that piece of it. It's really been on treatment. I would say, again, you know, the most robust treatment, I talked about the 12,000 acres, of which about 7,000 acres will be harvested. There's potentially 650 miles of roadside treatment that we're going to do. That's going to be hit or miss because there's a lot of green places in there. But, you know, if you really wanted to, you know, push me on a number, you know, I'd say, you know, between all of that, you know, 50 million feet, you know, 75 million more feet, you know. Mm-hmm. Just haven't spent a lot of time on that piece.
All right. A bunch of calls on this. Let's go first to Grumpy John in Grants Pass, Oregon. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Westside Fire Recovery Project with Patty Grantham and Andrew Scowland.
Thanks very much. You know, my brother was working on a Forest Service in years far past, and he said that their use of herbicides, which shouldn't be applied when there's incipient rain, was largely ignored in favor of just, here's the schedule, let's do it. So my question for you folks is, what are you going to do in regard to replanting? Is this going to become a monocrop? And number two is, how extensive is the use of your herbicides going to be, which will suppress the food for the animals there?
All right.
Thank you very much, and I definitely think you should salvage those dead trees. No reason to leave all of them standing. Get some of the timber out. And but I am concerned about the monocrop replacement. So please address that. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Grumpy John. So monoculture and herbicides, the two questions.
Sure. You know, that's an issue that has definitely been raised throughout the scoping process, and, you know, a lot of the comments we received from the public, you know, were around that planting issue. And, you know, we've come a long way, I think, in the Forest Service in terms of our techniques and our strategy around silviculture and reforestation. And, you know, we're taking a real close look at where these fires burned. And, you know, there are places out there where it's probably not appropriate to be reforesting, you know, and certainly incorporating that diversity into the replanting, looking at things like slope, aspect, elevation, you know, what would historically have grown there, and then adapting our planting strategy around spacing and really site-specific conditions to try and, you know, regenerate the most natural type of forest that we possibly can. You know, going in and row planting is not something we really do anymore. It's pretty site specific, and the species that are used are diverse and you know, appropriate for those particular site conditions. So it isn't going to be a monoculture, and we have not used herbicides on the Klamath for a number of years, I believe, and there's no proposal to use herbicides in this project.
Okay, let's move on to Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I'm a translator in part by profession, so meaning of words means something to me, especially in the English language, because I spend a lot of time learning it. And so my what I would like is, I would like things like treatment, you know, politicians euphemize things, and politicians throw around lingo that means nothing to the average person. So things like treatment or robust, you know, it's, don't take it personal, but it is 300 pages document. Who will ever read this? I mean, sometimes it's thousands of pages. And the question to me is, why are you on this show when you use terminology that the average person doesn't really know where to put, or by the time you're at the next sentence, wait a minute, what did he mean? It is, would you do me a great favor? And, I mean, we didn't have any snow, we didn't have sufficient snow. Don't snow job the public. Tell us real what these things mean. I don't know, maybe you can't even do that anymore because you have years and years of governmental lingo in
all right,
your
Wolfgang, let's get a response.
I think you know what I'm, okay.
Yeah, let's get a response. Go ahead, Patty.
So, you know, that is a great reminder to us. And every profession has its own lingo. And, you know, sometimes we just really get immersed in that. And we forget, you know, what Wolfgang is reminding us about. And I would say if you Googled West Side Fire Recovery Project, it's going to pop up. One of the first responses is going to be onto our webpage. There are some summary documents there. You know, again, very few people are going to read through a 300-page document, but, you know, hopefully there's some documents there that'll help be able to explain this a little more closely and better. And I just encourage folks to get there. And, you know, Wolfgang asked why we were on this show, and I'm not going to answer the question the way I think he meant it, but it was a good reminder for me. And one of the reasons why we're on this show today is that we are in a public comment period right now. And it's going to be open until April the 13th. And we really want to have, you know, some good public feedback, comments on our proposal, comments on the alternatives, what people like and don't like, you know, anything that they can feed back to us would be very welcome. So I thank Wolfgang for reminding me about that.
Till April 13th. Let's go to Michael in Wonder, Oregon. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with the folks from the Klamath National Forest.
Good morning.
Hi.
A little while ago, I heard the forest supervisor say that fires create clear cuts, and I think that is a gross misstatement. I think there's a great difference between a clear cut and the result of a hot burn on a fire.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good follow-up. Thanks for that, Michael. So the timber is still there standing in a lot of cases in the in a burn through, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, point well taken, you know, on that clear cut. You know, I'm a forester by training, and you know, I look out on a landscape and I don't really see anything that's growing there anymore, and that's my concern.
All right, let's go to John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, all.
Hi.
Well, real quick, I'd like to reflect. I think it was John who was talking about, you know, different species standing out there, and it's really offended me when I've seen copters splashing the chinkapin and the drone, you know, just because they just want to have their one species out there. But the reason I called is I wanted to ask you to reflect or give us some information about your thinning, if you know, because we've got a real problem up here in the Central Coast Range. This place, the dog hair is so thick, and it's just, you know, by the time it gets late August, it just scares the hell out of me. And I'm an old Hail Attack crew member, and I just see fire everywhere I look. But anyway, I just wanted to see how you guys, what kind of a situation you have with that there, and what you're going to do. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Thinning. Let's take that one on, Patty or Andrew.
I can take a stab at that. You know, around, we've been pretty well consumed with this West Side Fire Recovery Project for the last 8 months. You know, a lot of the forest staff is continuing to work on our normal kind of program of work, and a lot of that does surround, you know, getting out and treating the forest, making sure that, you know, the conditions out there are not such that, you know, we're setting ourselves up for another round of this. A lot of the projects, a lot of the timber harvests or timber projects that we do out on the landscape are centered around trying to create these fire adapted ecosystems and finding the right place and the right treatment.
Okay, you can hear the music, so we're running out of time. The public comment period is open through April 13th. We have a link to the West Side Fire Recovery Project through our website. If everybody loved it, what's the soonest that any work could take place? And I know that's not the case.
You know, I am hoping to make a decision on this project in early June. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if everything falls into place, we might be able to start work, you know, a couple weeks after that, mid to late June.
All right. Thank you very much to Patty Grantham, the Klamath National Forest Supervisor, Andrew Scowland, the West Side Fire Recovery Project Coordinator, and Joshua Veal, Public Affairs Specialist. Thanks all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.